Hey, fellas. We had Josh Denny on our podcast this week. You can follow him on Twitter at Josh Denny and also buy his album Social Hand Grenades at his website joshdennycomedy.com. You can follow me on Twitter at 790AlexM. Curtis.
At Curtis Chafin.
And the podcast is at Pass the Gravy Pod, so definitely do all of that, even though we just gave you like five things to follow.
You just gave everyone chores to do.
I did. I don't want it to seem like a chore, but I feel like if you follow us, if you take the seconds it takes and the thumb touches it takes to do it, I think it's going to be worth it in the long run. I feel like we might not have the best tweets, but they're somewhat witty. They're fairly good.
I had a question for you. Do you touch your penis with your thumb more than you touch your phone in a day?
No.
You touch your penis more?
No, I touch... You said, do I touch my penis with my thumb more? No, I touch my thumb to my phone more.
Or just hand in general.
Yeah, I would say phone.
Penis or phone?
Phone. What about you?
That's weird. Probably my phone, too.
How is it weird? How is it
weird? It's not weird. I watched that new scary movie, Deliverance from Evil, and you know, I'm not a fan of the scary movie genre.
You're not.
A girl talked me into going. My girlfriend.
There it is. Curtis is in a relationship.
Yeah, or at least I think I am, and hopefully
she. Do you like it?
I guess.
Then you should have put a ring on it.
Shut up.
Right, so you're watching a scary movie.
Again, not against my will, but it was definitely against my better judgment. And I realized that it fucked me up. I'm sitting in my house just like with my headphones on and realize like anyone can sneak up behind me and just wait for this like ghouly demon to, like just to come around the corner and like see something in the shadows, and like I couldn't go to sleep last night. I only slept for 3 hours, and when I finally did go to sleep, I heard like the loud music playing that was in the movie, the scary music, and I woke up and the music wouldn't go away, and then like I finally got up and looked around, and then it finally like went down a little bit. I realize I'm just covered in sweat, which brings me to the question.
Hold on. Before we do that, I just want to, like, I feel like you bring up a good point to where you were kind of drug into seeing a scary movie. Now, there is, it's almost like an unwritten rule that you can't say no if a girl suggests going to a scary movie and you're a male. Is that correct? Because you don't want to look like a pussy, but, like, everybody doesn't look like a scary
movie. How much do you like the
movies.
Girl? How much do you like the girl, though?
Good point. Good point.
I've turned down scary movies. Girls like, you want to go see this movie? I'm like, not with, like, I wouldn't see that movie. I'd only see that movie with someone I care about, and you're not one of those things.
I just feel like we shouldn't be hated on for not wanting to go see a scary movie, because one, the movie may not be that good anyways. Scary movies are usually about a 50-50 shot at being awful. And then two, maybe I'd rather go see a funnier movie because I felt like I was in the mood to go see something funny, but
I don't know who gets in a mood for a fucking scary movie. Like, I just want to be scared. Why does anybody want to be fucking scared?
I've always
scared?
Wondered that myself. Like,
why wouldn't you just rather be laughing?
But it's usually, like, bad scary movie marathons.
Yeah, because they're funny, because they want to fucking laugh. I think most people want to laugh. People like laughter most of the time. Not many people like being fucking scared. It's like sitting there covering their eyes like,
maybe
oh, my
Halloween?
God.
Maybe on
when's
Halloween. What's
the thing? Maybe, because that's festive and that's what you're supposed to do, right? But I don't know, like, hey, it's February, let's go watch fucking someone kill someone with their magic powers and then rape their body. Like, nobody wants to see that, ever.
Okay, and so you said that you were sweating. You're sweating when you woke up.
And I realized, it brought this question to my mind, is how often do you wash your bed sheets? And before I answer, I'd like you to go first, because I'd probably beat you.
Well, yeah, but I bet you do, and I only say that because I live with a girlfriend, and so she also sleeps in the bed, so she has a say in it, and she is not as lenient on the length of time you can go without having it washed as I am. Because when I was in college, that shit never got washed. Christmas, maybe Thanksgiving.
Well, those are like right next to each other, so that Thanksgiving between Christmas is like pretty fucking nice.
It was awesome. It was like a 2 week period, and then you got it done again, and you're like, hell yeah! And then
you smell the soap, the aromas just going into your nose.
There is maybe no better smell than a brand, like a fresh bed once it's just made.
You just lay down, you're like,
you get the detergency smell if it's a nice smell. You're like,
well, feel like you're in a field of flowers minus ants.
You just took a shower, so you're all clean, and there, you know that there's nothing dirty about the bed at all. That's pretty awesome.
See, sometimes I get too tired to shower, and I'll just go to bed.
I do too. I do too. And then, like, the crispness of the bed, I guess, is always ruined.
Turns into a greasy tarp. No, I got my bed sheets in February, March, and they still have yet to be cleaned.
You don't have a washing machine?
I do. I have a community washing machine. And
you got a girlfriend now. Make her do your sheets.
I don't let her go in my room because it's fucking horrible. I do sleep with a dog, though, but I think she just, like, she just has the mentality of the dirtier the better.
Yeah, that's how most dogs are.
Like, oh, it smells like shit. I want to eat it or rub my face on it.
Most likely, yeah. Well, why don't we let you guys listen to our interview with Josh Dean. This was maybe definitely top three that we've had so far. Yes. Maybe my favorite.
He has an album out, Social Hand Grenades. Find it on his website. It's fucking awesome.
We'll talk about it right after this.
Hello, podcast fans. Adam Carolla here. I'm leading the fight against patent trolls who are threatening this medium. It's not about me. It's about the podcast you're listening to right now. If I go down, this show could be next. Visit fundanything.com/patent troll for more information on how you can keep podcasting alive. Thank you and mahalo.
I'm a working man. I gotta pay my bills.
A pack of wild dogs took over and successfully ran a Wendy's.
Oh, look at me, the millionaire who goes to see doctors.
You just smile and follow me. You filthy animal.
What is this, a prey? The game is cold, but
it's crazy. And don't you ever forget, you're free to do what we tell you.
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
The only thing I think of when I think of my kids growing up in this country, if they say, Dad, what do we have left that's American-owned? And I say, son, I mean, there's not much to choose from, but that's what we have Pabst Blue Ribbon for.
Child, please.
Josh Denny on the podcast. He's been on funnyordie.com. You're a writer, actor, comedian, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I dabble in as much as I can.
You're at Josh Denny on Twitter.
Yes.
JoshDennyComedy.com if you want to get his album. And tell me about you're trying to get a Kickstarter going for a vinyl album.
Yeah, so one of the things I always do when I'm kind of like trying to figure out the next move career wise is I just try to pay attention to what's happening out there. And one of the things that I saw on one of the websites I keep up with was Jack White's new album set a record for vinyl sales, that, you know, numbers that haven't been done since 1991. And so, you know, it's pretty astounding to me that an artist today with as many, you know, digital outlets as there are for music could sell 30%. Like he did, I think 132,000 units in the first weekend, and he did like 41 in vinyl. Yeah. And yeah. So like I read this article that said not only, you know, a lot of people are like, well, that's Jack White's fans and they're all hipsters and they don't even own, you know, iPods. But when I read it, it said, you know, vinyl is actually the only music medium that has grown year over year. So even digital sales are down this year by about 3%, but vinyl sales are up about 7%. So it's sort of the only growth area in music sales. So I just threw a thing out on Twitter. I have a decent-sized Twitter following and asked people, like, hey, if I did my next album on vinyl, would you guys buy it? And there was a significant response there and on Facebook. So I thought, okay, well, let me see if I can, you know, what the response would be if I did a limited run on my last album in vinyl, did like special artwork and some other things. And it's been decent so far. Like, I think we're 10% raised. We're about a week in, and knowing the kind of urgency that people have behind things in the beginning, it's trending a little bit better than I expected. Like, usually people will get with things like that. I've noticed they'll get to like the last week, you know, of something, and then everything kind of flows in last minute. So, you know, the cool thing about it is, probably a year ago or 2 years ago, if I wanted to do this, I would have been like, yeah, let me spend the $3,000 and go get records pressed and I'll sell them at shows. And then I'll be driving around with a trunk full of records for months.
What am I going to do with these?
Yeah. Like, these are great. People be like, what are those records? And like, that was a good investment, right? Like, way to go. Can't wait to get that on eBay in 5 years when you can't pay your rent. So
it'll be like Will Smith in Pursuit of Happiness.
Yeah,
what was he trying to sell?
Some medical equipment that is not needed. But he bought a shit ton of them.
I remember he was trying to sell some fucking shit. I can't remember what it was exactly. Do you have a record player?
Do I have a record player? No, I actually, it's actually something I was like, in reading all this, I was like, do they even still make record players? And so I found these record players. There's actually a company that's pretty big into making record players right now called Crosley. And what they do is they actually, their record players allow you to take old records and convert them, like rip them into MP3 directly to your computer. So, you know, if people want kind of that same sound and that same staticky vibe, they can rip albums to their MP3 player, to their iPod or whatever, and listen to stuff. So I'm like a huge OfferUp nut. I don't know if you guys know that app, but it's basically like a classifieds for your iPhone. And so anytime I want to buy anything, I always go on OfferUp and find somebody who has buyer's remorse over buying something and then is just giving it away for like $20. OfferUp, yeah, it's pretty cool. I should be getting paid for all these product plugs.
Yeah.
Do you listen to the Opie and Anthony show?
Yeah, I try to catch it as much as possible. I'm a big Jim Norton fan. I did a podcast with him one time, and so I try to catch it anytime I'm in the car listening to Sirius.
Have you been following the Anthony Cumia firing?
I have, actually, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, a lot of people have kind of come out and been like, we're just going to cancel our subscriptions because they fired him. So it'll be interesting if they backtrack.
Do you think there's any way Sirius ever brings him back?
I don't know. I think this kind of press is actually good for taking your business private. Like, Stern went through how many of these things before he said, I'm just going to do my own network, and then – you know, if people are paying you $5 a month to listen to your podcast, and you've got the listenership that ONA have, like, I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but imagine if they have 1 million people that listen to their show, they'd be making $5 million a month.
Jesus.
Well, I just didn't understand why he got fired for saying like outrageous things when the whole point of SiriusXM is, well, hey, they can say whatever the fuck they want. And it's okay.
Yeah, it boils down to, like, we see stuff like this all the time, like comedians, when I say we. It's like when Gilbert Gottfried came out and did the Japan tweets, and then Geico fired him. And supposedly it was because Geico actually has a really big Japanese insurance business. I didn't know that. That they must have a lot of rickshaw policies going on these days. I have no idea how that works, but that was the reason that they did it. But it's like, you know, I remember watching Gilbert Gottfried on USA Up All Night when I was a kid, and like, the guy has been sort of a shock comedian his entire career. So like, for you to hire somebody that is known for that, and then in the serious situation, in a context where that is, you know, that's like, that's what you're selling. That's what you're already selling to advertisers. So for you to be like, oh, we're going to back out because we're afraid advertisers might drop the show. The reality is, you know, and I don't know if you guys know my background. I used to be in corporate America. So the reality is everyone that already pays ads for that show love that press because it's just going to get more people to tune into the show.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think people connect what they buy to the opinions that they think are expressed in the content. The reality is if the ad is put in front of you, like if I'm watching – The Office on TV or The League, right? And I see a commercial for ribs that I want to go eat. I don't go, wait a minute, though. Did I like all the jokes before the ribs were put in my face? I don't know.
What are his opinions on gay marriage?
What's that?
What is Nick Kroll's opinion on gay marriage before I go to this establishment?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I got to think back on whether or not I approved of all the messages in this program before delicious ribs look delicious to me. So I just think it's stupid. I used to argue with executives when I worked in corporate retail all the time about the effectiveness of certain marketing campaigns and whether or not to. I think the reality is customers today are more likely to buy your shit if they think you just don't care. Like if I made something, like if I made tires and we sponsored Opie and Anthony, I go, yeah, man, it's America. The dude can be pissed off at whoever he wants to be pissed off at. Oh, and by the way, buy our tires. Like, that's it. Like, I think companies shoot themselves in the foot by pretending to have an opinion. But look what Chick-fil-A did. Chick-fil-A came out and was like, we hate gay people. It's like, you could have said nothing. You could have kept hating gay people, but you could have said nothing and they would have bought all your chicken.
Well, then a ton of conservatives went out, though, and bought Chick-fil-A just to be like, ha-ha, look what we can do. And I feel like they did make a shit ton of money.
They're like, look, if the fags don't want it, we'll eat twice as much.
I don't give a shit.
If we starve them a chicken, they'll die off eventually.
They're all vegans anyways, right?
Yeah, so, I think that logic is stupid. Like, you know, we don't want your money. Good, go out of business. Like, you're just told, if you fire Anthony Cumia because you don't like his politics on his show, then prepare to lose the business of everyone that agrees with it.
My favorite thing kind of like that was when the whole Donald Sterling thing was going on, and you had the players like, well, are they going to boycott and not play for him? I was like, yeah, please tell me you're not going to take your $20 million paycheck. Because you don't believe in what your fucking owner says.
Yeah, first of all, the guy owns a team of black dudes. You shouldn't have been surprised. He was around for the first player draft when it was held off of the dock of a ship. Like, what do you think his opinion is?
Yeah, the old crotchety white guy doesn't like black people. Shocker, man.
Yeah, we need bigger. Please, could you imagine him at the draft? We need bigger, stronger, faster ones. You know who used to say that? Fucking Leo DiCaprio in the Django time. It's just like, it's so stupid, man. Like, I'll tell you what, if there's anything we're going to do, we're going to politically correct ourselves into bankruptcy as a company because people are going to get so up in arms about what everyone's beliefs are and they're going to stop caring about their money to the point where they don't make any. And so companies are going to be like, well, we can't advertise to this group because then this group won't like us. And it's like, okay, well, you better be making a product or something that's so specific to one group of people. And that better be a big enough group of people to sustain your business or else, you know, your choices are going to cost you money.
It's almost like people are just like looking through news articles daily to be like, what can I be pissed off about and start a riot over? Who said something that I could try
it's people
and
on Twitter.
Shame?
It's people on Twitter.
Is Twitter the reason?
I think it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think – I don't know that you can narrow it down to Twitter. I think the idea that everyone has an outlet to talk about what they think or their opinions, I think a lot of people assume that also means that people should care about their thoughts and opinions. Yeah. And that's not necessarily the case. So I think that's where you get all that outrage. It's like, well, how can this exist if I don't like it? Everyone has to know I don't like it. It's kind of like – you know, if you went to a movie and you didn't like it, would you stand up in the middle of the movie and scream about how shitty it was? No, you'd walk out, you'd talk with your friends, you'd go to a Denny's, and you'd go to the next movie a week later. Like, now we live in a world on the internet where it is the equivalent of somebody standing up in the middle of the movie and going, this is shit. Can't everyone see it? Why are we watching this? Turn it off. because I don't like it.
But it's in a movie theater, people would be like, get the fuck out of there, buddy.
Right, exactly. And I think we do the same thing on the internet. I just don't think they hear us.
It's the keyboard. It's like that keyboard confidence. Like, once you get behind a keyboard in your room by yourself, you can say whatever you want, because there's not really any repercussions that come from you saying, oh, this movie's shit, Leo DiCaprio is the fucking worst actor ever. Like, nothing's going to happen to that guy.
Josh, you had a really good blog post that we were looking at and talking about when we were preparing for this about how people don't have fear anymore, and I think that contributes to it. It's like, on Twitter, you don't get your ass beat down if you say that to somebody, but like, if you say it to them in the street, they can just whip your ass, and you don't just get to go about your day.
Yeah, I'll always tell people this story. Like, I was always a kid. I was always a kid at a hair trigger temper. Like, imagine that being redheaded. But like, and I was not a big kid. Like, I'm not a small dude now. But when I was in like fifth grade and sixth grade, I was like maybe, you know, 80 pounds. I was a skinny little twerp. And I would, like, if I talk shit to people, they would just wait for me outside after school and beat my ass. And then I had to learn how to fight. And then I learned it's just easier to shut the fuck up sometimes. And so it's like, you know, I just don't – I mean, like, that's my mentality. I think we come up with a generation of people who never got their ass kicked and never got a kick for no reason, to the point where they're like, well, the last thing I'm going to do is give somebody a reason. And yeah. I do think that is a healthy amount of fear. You know, like, think about like when you watch Westerns and old West movies, the way people acted around police, because police would just shoot you if you were screwing up in the old West. And now, like, police are getting YouTube video if they don't use the right procedure on a traffic ticket.
Mics on them at all time.
Cameras, yeah, so,
like, you know, now you'll see YouTube videos of people in police officers' faces like, fuck you, what you gonna do? What you gonna do, you piece of shit? You're just like, you wouldn't have done that 100 years ago because you just got shot and beat. In that order, they'd actually shoot you first and then beat your dead body to send you.
Let's say you were raping a young woman when they came across you.
Right, exactly. It's just like, so I don't know. I really do think that's a big thing. Like, people just aren't afraid. You're talking about the blog post where I talked about my neighbor who moved my lawn. Yeah.
Yes, tell everybody that's listening, for those that have not read it.
Yeah, so like we live in an apartment complex that's like 16 units. So there's not a lot of people that live here, and there's only like three of us that don't have in-unit washer and dryers. And so we use the one that's on the premises. So I always wait till late at night to do my laundry so I don't run into anybody else, and I can do like 10 loads or whatever I have at once. So one of the machines broke down and my stuff wasn't drying. So it took like three cycles to dry. So one of those cycles, I left to get like Taco Bell. I came back and my wet shit was taken out of the machine and put on in a basket on the floor. And then this dude had like washed and then put his shit in the dryer. And then really the real fuck you about it was there are two dryers. So rather than just after he washed his shit, putting it in the other dryer, he specifically pulled my wet shit out of the top dryer, put it in the basket, and dried his stuff in on my cycle.
That's my favorite one.
So, yeah. And so I was like, I texted my girlfriend who's upstairs, and I go, so this is what happened. I'm just going to wait. Like, I can see his dry cycle's done in 5 minutes. I'm going to wait. I don't know who it is. I don't know who the person is. So dude walks down, and then a minute he comes down the stairs into the garage, you can see the look of terror on his face, like, fuck. And I just go, is that your shit in there? And he was like, oh, what, the laundry? I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, that's mine. And I go, did you move my shit to put your shit in there? And he goes, yeah. I go, what the fuck makes you think that's okay? And he's just like, well, you were taking too long. I go, I don't give a shit if I took all fucking night. It's first come, first serve, dude. That's how it works. Sorry if your precious laundry couldn't wait until tomorrow. Yeah. But the fact that you would have the balls to take somebody's wet shit out and throw it on the floor and just be like, fuck y'all. Like,
taking too long, though, like, you mean the dryer cycle wasn't finished yet?
Obviously. Well, yeah. Yeah, it's just, he's like, well, you just, like, he was like, you're hogging the laundry. And I'm just like, okay, man, like, just move along. I couldn't believe it. And then at one point, like, the whole thing, people can read my blog post on Tumblr, but it's like, the whole thing escalated to the point, and I just got to the point where I was like, dude, stop making excuses. Like, if you keep trying to explain to me that this is okay, we're going to have a fucking problem. And he just was like, really? Like, you're really going to, like, threaten me? And I go, what if I just fucking knocked your face off? Like, what if that's how I opened? It's like, has that never happened to you in your life? It's like Fight Club. It's like sort of like there's a whole generation of people that have never been in a fight, never gotten their ass kicked over something ridiculous, and they just have this ballsy lack of repercussions attitude about the world.
Yeah. And everyone thinks they're an exception to every rule.
Yeah, I mean, in my act, I joke, that's how you know there's not enough black people in a city. So.
How excited were you waiting for him to come back? Were you like sitting there pumping yourself up?
No, I wasn't, because I didn't know who it was. It could have been like a 6'8" dude who used to play for the fucking Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know who it is.
If it had been a bigger guy, do you think you probably would have just been like, I'm just going to wait till he's done?
Hell no. My hope would be that the bigger guy would beat the living shit out of me, and then I could also sue him.
I sued you and I proved a point.
Yeah, I put the point. Like, you kicked my ass for you being wrong, and now you get to go to prison.
That's another thing, though. People do, like, if you were to beat people's ass, they can sue you, and then it just comes back to bite you in the ass anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. That's the thing my girlfriend later on is just like, you know, that's the thing. Like, we have laws that protect pussies. Like,
yeah.
you can be a pussy and get away with it now because, like, you know, everyone goes to jail. I remember when I was a kid, like, if police showed up, like, I remember domestic situations. My mom lived in this really shitty apartment in Dover, Delaware when I was a kid. And there were all kinds of, like, horrible domestic situations in this apartment every night. And I remember cops showing up and, like, the dude and the girlfriend outside. And she'd be like, oh, he hit me. And he was like, well, she was talking shit. And the cop would be like, maybe you shouldn't talk shit, okay? Like,
listen, bitch.
Maybe you shouldn't talk shit.
Like, I mean, like, the police used to have, like, common sense. They would be like, don't talk shit. He's huge. I'm a police officer. I wouldn't talk shit to him. Like, maybe you guys should how to work things out before you rile him up and he gets to whipping your ass. And that was the police would do that. They'd be like, you should, you know. And if it was dudes, they would have no sympathy. They'd be like, look, you guys can beat the shit out of each other all day. We don't care. Like,
Did you steal his girl? Should you have had your ass beat?
Did you? Yeah. Well, if you fucked his wife, dude, he probably should kick your ass. I don't know if the police back then were just shittier or lazier, but they were just like, yeah, man, we're not taking one of you to jail because one of you got, like, poetic justice served for doing some fucked up shit.
Well, another thing that happens, and it's, I guess, kind of related, is how, like, anytime in a domestic issue now, like, if the woman says she was touched, regardless of if she was touched,
immediately,
or
guys,
an attempted assault or whatever, regardless of if he was even doing anything to her, that guy's hauled off to jail immediately, no questions asked.
And the funny thing is cops still treat women the same way I just described. Like, if a woman stabs a dude, they're just like, dude, man, like, don't be in the way of the knife. Like, we can't help you. You're a man. She's a woman. She can beat your ass for 10 hours straight, and you won't restrain her.
You're gone.
Yeah, it's just, and that double standard is getting ridiculous too. I think that was highlighted by the Yes All Women hashtag campaign where. You know, women, like, you see ones that are serious that were like, you know, I had a boss, like, rape me when I was a teenager at the Dairy Queen job. And you're like, wow, that's horrible. And then, like, right below that tweet, there's a girl who's like, one time I wore a hot crop tank top and everyone on my street looked at me and I never wore that shirt again. Just like, yep, those are the same. Like, if somebody stared at you when you were wearing revealing clothing, you're right, we should all hang ourselves.
Or I got drunk at a frat party one night and went home with some dude that I regretted the next day, but rather than telling my friends I made a dumb decision, I just said he raped me.
Right, like,
and then he's a sexual predator for the rest of his life.
But you know what's funny is, like, there are a lot of women who, if they hear you say that, they're like, see, that's what everyone says. They just downplay rape. Like, just because she got drunk doesn't mean he can rape her. It's like, no, maybe none of that ever happened.
Yeah.
Maybe no one raped anybody.
I was going through your tweets, and I scrolled back pretty far, and you had some issue with, was it, it wasn't CSI, was it Law and Order with somebody?
Yeah.
A rape-based joke or something?
Yeah, I made a rape tweet, and I'll reverse engineer the whole thing, because like a lot of people are like, well, why would you post that? I was doing that Vegas run that I was telling you guys about earlier, and I was at this late night restaurant with two other comedians, and my girlfriend's Middle Eastern, and so we were talking about all the stereotypes about Middle Eastern women being superficial and you know, like just gold diggers. And I said, my girlfriend's actually not like that at all. But I go, she does have a sibling that's kind of like that. And one of the other comics goes, like, he goes, you ever wonder if that's why rape was invented, to like teach women a lesson? And I was like, and so like we went off on this rabbit hole of like, if it was just like the way of keeping order back in the day, and watch Game of Thrones, it seemed to work pretty well.
It just got worse and worse. The whole, like, the conversation just kept getting darker and darker, huh?
Of course, because we're all comedians. So, like, you just take it to that nth degree.
And you're joking. You all get that it is you guys joking around and not.
Yeah, we're not laughing. Women. Yeah, we're not laughing at the idea of that. Like, yo, it's not like we're joking. Like, we have a great business idea. And when we're done laughing, we do it. Like, we're laughing because we're like, how ridiculous is this train of thought? And so in the conversation, one of the lines I blurted out about spoiled girls that I've dated was, I was talking about one specifically, and I go, that girl would have had to been raped. She would have had to been, she couldn't have just been raped. She would have had to been raped in holes that don't even exist yet. Like, she would have had to have new holes made, which is hilarious. And so I tweeted it. And had no idea, like, and what you said earlier is true. Like, some chick was sitting at home just searching for rape tweets.
Hashtag rape, and she's looking at
the girl, because the chick who started it all didn't even follow me. She just found the tweet, retweeted it into her timeline, and hell ensued. And then my response was, why is it that the chicks always most offended by rape jokes are the ones that never have to worry about it? And which is very interesting to me, how many people immediately took that as saying women are ugly, because nowhere in that did I say women are ugly. My initial thought was, like, these are women that sit at home on the internet and, like, just type in shit to be offended by. You're not even out in public to get raped. Like, you have to leave your house for that shit to happen. So that went nuts. And then somehow, like a week before that, there was, I guess, a Law & Order SVU show that was about a comedian that made jokes about rape and then was also a rapist, which is shitty television to begin with. He's told every preteen girl in America that if a comedian makes jokes about rape, then what he's going to do after the show is just rape everybody.
And that Law & Order SVU is completely non-fictional.
Right. So it somehow got to a dude named Warren Late, who is the showrunner for SVU. So I don't know if everyone knows what a showrunner is. It's like an executive producer, but the showrunner is essentially the guy who dictates the entire course of the show. So he'll take all the scripts that the writers put together in the course of a season, and then they'll plot a season out. In a show like SVU, where it's all procedural, it doesn't necessarily have to have character arcs beyond episodes. But the showrunner's job, he's kind of like the show manager from a creative perspective. So this is the guy who literally says, this is the content we're going to make for SVU. He's the one who decides what shit gets made. And so he just tweeted, like, regarding Josh Denny rape tweet, you need to seriously reevaluate your life, bro. And I was like, you're right, I shouldn't make rape jokes. I should dedicate my life to filming as realistic reenactments as possible and profit from it for over a decade. And then we got into this whole thing, and it was like my fans versus SBU fans, and my fans going, look, at like, I had so many fans of mine that were like, I've been raped, and I love a good rape joke, and I hate SVU because that shit is terrifying. Like, I'll laugh at the concept of a rape joke in a comedy club where there's security around, but you want me to sit in my dark, quiet apartment and watch rape reenactments on television? Like, that's better.
Yeah.
And so it goes into this whole subjectivity thing of, like, and then everybody's excuse, well, SVU raises awareness about rape. Does it? Or does it? I could argue it shows every teenage dude in America all the shit not to do if you don't want to get caught.
Did you also know that the NFL raises awareness by wearing pink cleats for a month? Like, they wear breast cancer awareness. That's a whole lot of awareness.
I don't know if you guys know this, but that completely cures everyone of breast cancer. Like, if you have breast cancer and you watch an NFL game and they have the pink gloves on, it's gone.
Andre Johnson has pink gloves. That obviously means he fixed cancer.
Done. All he does is he grabs your titty with the pink glove, cancer leaves it, and it's done.
Is that what they're doing when they visit the hospital all the time? They're just
That's actually cancer? How Jesus did all of his miracles.
They touch him with the pink gloves.
Jesus just had pink NFL breast cancer awareness gloves on all the time.
And a Livestrong bracelet.
And drank the pink 5-hour energies.
Yeah, he was all set. So yeah, like just and that this is a great point you bring up is the idea of raising awareness. That's fucking stupid.
What the
too.
Fuck is awareness? Like, yeah, I know it exists. Cool. Let's spend more money on it.
If the mafia had known about this whole awareness campaign shit back in the 60s, they would have never had to hijack a truck. Yeah. Man, you know we can just raise money for awareness and research and nobody ever knows where that shit goes.
Like, what is this shit that Michelle Obama was trying to hashtag, like, hashtag bring our girls back? And it's like, we're raising awareness for sex trafficking or whatever it is. And it's like, I know that that's happening. It's not happening by me. But like,
I don't think
that hashtag isn't going to fix it.
Yeah. And so it was just sort of like, and then I tweeted something else about, like, it was something along the lines of like, yeah, I bet women in Africa really empathize with yes, all women. Like, I'm sorry, we couldn't jump on your yes, all women train because we were too busy getting raped and murdered through the course of daily transactions.
And
because
not
that's
having Twitter because we live in fucking Africa.
Right, exactly. Like, I'm sorry, I was too busy getting raped in exchange for fresh water and a place to shit. Like, because that's how I lived. Like, I mean,
this is
like,
a daily occurrence for me.
I'm not fucking like world traveling guy like Jay-Z bringing fresh water to people in Africa. I'm not a world traveling philanthropist. But I also don't sit in my pretty good life in America and go, boy, this is all shit, right, guys? I can't leave the house without getting raped. And then you've got women in third world countries like, if I leave the house and don't get raped, I'm gonna be broke as shit this week.
Yeah, they're begging for it.
I'm not gonna get like that's their currency. And by the way, it's not different in America. Men just ask for it first. That's really the only difference.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just as many women use pussy to pay for food and rent and all of those things.
I always wonder though, like, do you think every rapist at one point asks before he does it and gets shot down, or do you think they're just like, I just got to go for it?
I don't know, man. I'll tell you guys a really honest story. This is actually one of the things that led to me dating my girlfriend, which is kind of funny, and I'll get to that. Because at 30,000 feet, that sounds horrifying. But I met up with an ex-girlfriend in Vegas like a few years after we broke up. And she had like just gotten out of a marriage. And she was like, it's my birthday coming up. I just want to go to Vegas and have fun. And I was like, I'll be there for work. So let's meet up and hang out. And so like I was trying to keep it just loose and like, hey, let's just hang out and have fun and gamble and shit. And we met for like breakfast at like 1 a.m. the night she got in, and it turned into like why our relationship didn't work out argument like immediately. And I was like, oh, this is vicious, right? And so she's staying with me in my hotel. Like the third night she gets drunk, okay, and I don't drink, so I don't know, like I don't have a drunkometer to know where people are at. So in bed in the middle of the night, she climbs on top of me, starts making out with me, and like we're getting ready to bang, right? And I'm like, sweet, this is cool. And then something happens in the middle where she, like, comes to and freaks the fuck out. And it's just like, oh, my God, like, what the fuck just happened? And I go, I don't know. I thought you were trying to fuck me. That's what I thought would happen. She was like, I was dreaming. And I go, I didn't know you could do that. Like, I didn't know you could dream your way onto a dude and fuck him. Like, I was like, what are you, like the Freddy Krueger of dick? Like, how does that work? And so, and then, so she like runs into the bathroom crying and she's like, you fucking tried to rape me. And I was like, are you serious?
Whoa.
I was like, yes, I am the Hoist Gracie of rape. I lay down on hotel beds. I wait for you to climb on top to me, and then I have you. You know what I mean?
Like, I hypnotize you in your sleep.
So it was like, and then the next morning, and then she like passed out. So like, I'm freaked the fuck out. I sleep in the chair the rest of the night, you know, with like blankets over me and five pairs of jeans on and shit. And she wakes up the next day and she goes, so that was weird last night, right? And I go, weird? I go, you fucking accused me of trying to rape you. And she was like, oh, I'm sorry.
She threw around the R word. But like in your mind though, you're like, oh shit, I hope she's not serious about this tomorrow.
Well, it's just like, and nothing happened. Like, we hadn't even started anything. She was just making out with me, but it was like, that was something she initiated. I had no way of knowing that she wasn't of clear consciousness. And then for that to happen, like, that's a terrifying situation. So my girlfriend now, who I was friends with at the time, like, I called her and told her about it. And I go into the whole thing, and it was not as funny as it is now. I was like, dude, I was terrified. Like, this was horrific. And she goes, well, I do have to ask, did you rape her? It's like, you're fucked up.
Actually, yeah, I did, but I didn't want to think so.
But it's like, so I think of that situation, and I know that's not every situation, but I think, okay, I wonder how many guys have done time for that situation.
Yeah, because they would have believed her in a heartbeat if she had called the police the next morning.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the thing, like, what if it gets carried out? Like, we didn't actually do anything. But what if it's followed through and she wakes up in the middle of intercourse? Like,
oh, yeah, because then technically that is rape. If she
doesn't. And by the way, though, like, so it's sort of like she has a right to be upset because she wasn't conscious. But if the guy is not initiating it or is just an active participant and doesn't know any better, he's not wrong either. So there are these situations out there where it's like, nobody raped anybody. Like, you slept fucked somebody, and he didn't know it. Like, that happens, and there's no way to know. So, yeah, you have to take people at their word, and like, that's terrifying to me.
If you explain it to a jury, they're like, yeah, yeah, okay, she was asleep, and she tried to have sex with you. Yeah.
Right, yeah, right. Dude. That's, yeah, exactly. Like, nobody would ever believe that. And so, like, so then, and a lot of women would hear that story and go, well, then as a man, you just shouldn't be in bed with women ever. And you're like, okay, like, let's calm the fuck down. That's what this is.
Yeah, I think it's women play that, like, I don't want to say damsel in distress, but, like, if they turn on the tears, it's like,
they play the
victim card, and guys, I mean, it's easy to fall for because they can play this pathetic thing that needs help and want to help it.
And the thing that really pissed me off was I genuinely felt like I did something wrong. You know what I mean?
Even though nothing happened,
just because of how she felt and how she reacted to it, I felt like a piece of shit. I was like, fuck, man. Like, should I have recognized something? Like, should I have known she wasn't, like, conscious? Like, so I don't know.
Eyes open?
Yeah, her eyes were open the whole time. And then she like shook her head like this and then was like, put her hands over her face and then got up and ran to the bathroom. And I was like, what the fuck just happened?
Oh, man.
What if she was really trying to have sex with you and then like in the middle of it realized she just really had to take a shit and that's what happened?
So she claimed
she was embarrassed. Rape.
I've had to do that before. I've had to be like, I gotta go shit.
To us all.
Fuck.
Rape is no excuse for a surprise shit.
Right. So I don't know, man. It's just like, I get it. But in those situations, I think you both have to be adults and be like, oh, man, like, you know, we
this
were both
is what drunk. It is, yeah.
Were drunk. Like, yeah, that look, if that shit happens, it happens. So
that's what Anthony was saying in his tweets afterwards about that chick that he was taking pictures of. He was saying that he was threatening to call the cops, and she said that she'd tell him that she just was sexually assaulted by him ahead of time. And
right.
And he would have been screwed and taken away anyways.
And women need to understand, like, that's going to perpetuate more rape. Like, if you start using rape as a weapon or rape claims as a weapon, like, if you tell men, if you're the kind of girl that goes... Like, I this used to happen a lot. Like, when we were kids playing on the playground, girls would yell rape. Like, when we'd be, like, 10. Like, we didn't even know what fucking was. And girls would just yell. That was a reaction. Yell rape. And so, like, the girls that do, I feel like girls that react that way put a bullseye on them, because it's like, well, fuck, now if I'm going to go to jail because you yelled rape, now you're going to get raped. Like, I think that's a dangerous game to play too. Like, I don't think you can use it as a weapon, because if anything, you're going to draw that kind of attention to yourself.
And apparently, and you actually wrote a sketch for Funny or Die Like This, but apparently some people do get off at rape.
Absolutely. Like, we were watching, that sketch was something my girlfriend came up with. We were watching some show where these women were crying about their rape stories, and she just, like, deadpan looked over at me, and she goes, is it wrong that this is pretty hot to me? Like, these stories are hot? And I was like, how funny would that be if some chick, like, had these meetings, and the only reason she had it was because it turned her on? And, like,
trying to get off the whole time.
Like, she's just trying to get off the whole time, like, hey, what do you smell like? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, let's add, what, you know, could you, like, kind of, like, walk us through it step by step? And so, yeah, like, we made a short film about it, which is on Funny or Die.
And then your other Funny or Die was the invention of the telephone that we didn't really get to see.
A Day in History.
That was, yeah, so brilliant.
Yeah, that was written and directed by, written by Luke Allen from Weirdfellas and Eric Boccio, who directed the short we did, the Survivors Anonymous short. But yeah, it was kind of Luke's. Luke has these great ideas of, like, what if shit was like just like it is today, even back then. So his idea was like, what if the first phone call was just two dudes fucking around with each other and talking shit to each other, and you know, so yeah, it was something we did. Like, he sort of flushed out, and we did it in a weekend, and I was pretty happy with the result. It was pretty funny. Like, the idea that we're just, like, too violent. You can tell there's a lot of, like, Tarantino influence in the stuff Luke does, because, you know, we're basically like two violent dudes, like Travolta and Jackson in Pulp Fiction, you know, having a conversation, the first phone conversation ever.
You're like, put him on the phone. Put him on the phone. He's like fucking dying. Or whenever he hung up, he's like, bye, asshole. I was like, that's fucking shit that happens every day. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and the kid that played the reporter, Quinn Butterfield, man, he was great in that. Like, his ability to, first of all, it was like 1,000 degrees that day, so he didn't have any problems sweating and looking nervous. but he played that part to a T, of just being like this terrified newsie who showed up to, like, document the telephone. Funny side or side story to that. That telephone that we used was actually like a historic museum, like, thing, and we dropped that fucking phone like 5 times, and we ended up having to pay for it. It was like $500 prop, like, museum, like, artifact prop phone.
Wait, so it wasn't the real phone? It was the real phone.
No, it's not. It wasn't the original phone, but it was one of the original models. Like, it wasn't the one. It wasn't the prototype, but it was one of the very first telephones.
And you just fucking kept dropping it.
I don't think it was the first, but yeah, we ended up dropping it, and just, like, I remember Luke that day was so pissed. Like, we got into, like, the third phone drop where it really broke, and he was like, "Ah, shit! Like, this is gonna be." This, the budget of this production just tripled.
It just went up.
So
you were born in Philadelphia. You've lived in Minnesota. You've moved all around. How did you end up moving around so much?
Well, I grew up on the East Coast. I was born in Philly, or just outside of Philly. And then I moved to Minnesota in high school because I wanted to play ice hockey out there and try to get a scholarship. And then when I moved to my town out there, there were like 6 goalies on my team already. So they were like, you can play JV. And our team in Minnesota was like a pro team, in the sense that, like, they have their own arena in the town for ice hockey. So, like, to play hockey that season, it would have been like $5,000-$6,000. And my mom was like, I'm not going to pay $6,000 for you to warm the bench. And I was like,
yeah, expensive fucking sport, man.
Hell yeah, dude. And I was like, I was growing at the time, so I would have needed all new equipment too. So you're looking at like a $10,000 investment to play ice hockey.
You were a goalie, right?
Yeah, I was a goalie.
I used to be a goalie in high school, and I remember working an entire summer job just so I could buy pads.
Yeah, like, and shit's even cheaper now. Like, I don't know if the economy has, like, really affected kids playing hockey, but, like, you can get an entire goalie set for, like, $3,000. I remember when I played, and this is, like, 1998, leg pads alone were, like, $3,500.
Yeah.
And, like, a glove was, like, $500, you know, your helmet was $500. All that shit is now, like, $200. And it could just be because they found out how to make it cheaper, but... yeah, man, like it was twice as expensive as it is today. And then you had like rink time, like they had to pay, essentially you're paying like the maintenance and stuff on the rink that you practice at and play at. At practices were at like 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Whenever you get ice time.
Yeah, before school and then 5 p.m. after school. And so, I mean, I got a job and started working junior year of high school, but I was also into music. I'd played guitar since I was 7, and I just was like, well, fuck it. If I'm going to spend money, I'm going to be in a band. I'm not going to play hockey. So that was kind of the course that I turned, and then I'd done a few bands up until like 2003, and then I was like kind of doing the corporate day job thing in Minnesota. And then I started doing comedy in 2007, and my job had me traveling the country, so like I would travel Chicago, Michigan, Minneapolis, New York, Philly, California and stuff, and I would just do open mics in the different cities as I traveled. And then I did pretty well with stock with one of the companies I worked for, and retired in 2007. Yeah, fall of 2007, and did comedy full time until spring of 2009, when that same company called me back and said, do you want to move to LA and run our businesses out there? So I was like, yeah, I'll move out to LA, and I figured I could do comedy and stuff. And then I've worked for a few other companies, in the meantime. And then in the fall this year, had a issue with one of the companies I was working with, was let go, and then, decided I'm just going to do comedy full time now. So.
I read that you did 300 open mics in the first 6 months.
Yeah, so Minneapolis.
That's fucking amazing.
Yeah, like Minneapolis has this amazing comedy scene. A lot of people think Chicago is the third biggest market. I don't know, man. I actually think Minneapolis has a better market for stand-up. Like maybe comedy in general, when you include sketch and improv, Chicago's the third biggest city. But from a stand-up perspective, I don't think there's a bigger a city that has more talent than Minneapolis. I hear Austin's pretty good. I haven't spent a lot of time there. Atlanta has a cool little scene, but like, dude, Minneapolis, when I started, I went to an open mic on a Thursday night way outside of Minneapolis in this little town called Rochester, Minnesota. And then, because I had been a musician and done shows, all my friends that used to come out to band gigs came out to the open mics. So I was able to get a lot of stage time at open mics early on because I would bring audience members, like people that would actually come watch the shows. And so I did that show Thursday, and the other comics were like, dude, you need to come to this one on Sunday. And then I went to the one on Sunday, and they go, we got one on Monday. Then there's two on Tuesdays. There's one on Wednesday. There's three on Thursday. There's two Friday and two Saturday. So I literally did open mics after work every day, 7 days a week, for like the first 2 months I did comedy. And then even when I traveled, I would hit an open mic every night.
Wow. That's
at least one. No. Yes. Like, you know, in 180 days to do 300, I mean, that's almost like doing every day. And then there are days where you have two or three shows.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel burned out on it, or did you just love every minute of it?
I mean, like, you know, the only thing I got burned out on was waiting to go up, because in Chicago, like, when I would go to Chicago, I would do this place called the Lion's Den Open Mic at the Mix. And it feels special to be able to say I was a part of that, because at the time, these shows would start at like 7 o'clock and not end until 4 in the morning. Like, this was like an 8-hour open mic. And there would be like 200 comedians going up, and everybody would get like 5 minutes. And so it would just – people would get hammered. And this open mic, to give you an idea of the level of talent, and I remember I used to go there and I would think these guys sucked, and it was usually because they were drunk. But it would be a lineup at the Mix in 2007 would be me, TJ Miller,
Kyle
Kinane, Kumail Nanjiani, like Jonah Ray, Mike Burns, who's the guy who did Dad Boner on Twitter, and wrote the book, Mike Bridenstine, just so many people that are like huge right now. Prescott Tolk, who writes for that show Real Husbands of Hollywood. So like all these guys that are just huge heavy hitters in comedy right now, all were in Chicago and working out of that room at the time. And so like I would do those shows, and I remember watching Kyle Kinane get hammered and ramble and tell stories, and I was like, this shit isn't funny. And then Kyle Kinane's like one of the biggest guys to come out of Chicago, and you know, and that's the thing. One time, Mike Bridenstine was like, we were at one of the shows at the Mix, and he was like, Kyle has this line of drinking where he can come right up to a certain level of drunk and be brilliant, and if he goes an ounce over that, he's just fucking incoherent and babbling. And I don't know, they got the dosage right, because Kinane, I've seen him like probably five times in the last few years I've lived out here, and he's murdered it every time.
It's like down to a science is drinking.
Curtis is almost like that. He can hold so much alcohol, but if you go a little bit over it, he's going to cry and have a breakdown every single time.
That's horrible.
It's a curse.
He's a drunk crier.
Yeah.
Cry and run away.
Yeah, he's awful. Back in high school, we would have to just go find him. He would take off and run into neighborhoods and hop over fences.
I used to have to do that with women.
Yeah, he was almost like a woman that you didn't have sex with.
Yeah.
So there was no positive out of it.
Right, exactly. Just all the negatives and none of the plus.
You're an asshole for getting drunk.
He's like, Curtis, man, grow a vagina or stop drinking. You got to do one of the...
Well, yeah, I'm glad none of you tried to have sex with me, or at least try to convince me once. Get a little bit curious. Come on.
Maybe they should have, just to teach you a lesson about.
That was the last time.
Like when you were a kid, your parents were like, "I'll give you something to cry about." Like, you're like, if you're gonna act like a drunk chick, we're gonna treat you like a drunk chick.
Oh my god.
If Curtis is going to play the game, show me his feelings. We're going to play the game. How many dicks can fit inside him at once?
He'll learn his goddamn lesson then.
That's the last time he ran away.
He wakes up the next day hungover. He's like, guys, my asshole is so sore. And they're like, yeah, we're all really tired from hearing you talk about it.
We do a segment every podcast called Answers, and we have listeners send us questions, usually not at all based on what we're talking about, and then whoever's on our show will help us answer them, if you're down to do that.
Yeah, always.
All right, our first question comes from Dave Mugen, Dave M. He says, tandem bicycle, cherished memory, or cherished romantic memory, or instant divorce machine?
I think any bicycle for me is an instant divorce machine. On Instagram, I have these friends that, like, they're married and they bicycle everywhere together. And, like, my girlfriend and I both hate physical activity. So
yeah.
A tandem bicycle would just be ridiculous.
A shared hatred.
Yeah, like, it would just be a great way to start a fight. Like, hey, what's something we can do together that would make us both angry and hate each other?
I've never thought a tandem bicycle was a good idea, but in Houston they have this thing now, and it's like a bar hop, and it's got like an 8-passenger bike, and you just go from one bar to the other, and you don't have to pedal, but you can, and you just kind of hang on. They got one guy that steers it, and he's that like
sounds,
sober.
That sounds like what the guy who's the asshole on the tandem bike says. You don't even
Yeah, it's probably way worse if you go
there. Just non-contributing asshole.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess instant divorce machine is the majority.
Yeah, I would have to go with instant divorce machine.
Then this next question from J.D. Burton actually kind of fits what we've talked about this podcast. And he says, sexual battery, horrible crime, or great power source for vibrators?
Oh, yes. I see what he did there. Can it be both? It's both.
I think it definitely would cover both categories.
Yeah. I don't know, but I don't know that I've ever been in a hardware store and seen sex batteries. Like,
I don't know. That's a good name for like a vibrator battery company. Just sexual batteries.
Yeah, they're just real. They just last forever. That would be a great tagline. Like,
yeah, okay. I know. I was just saying, like, that's the best tagline I think there could possibly be. Yeah. Last forever.
All right.
That's more than this guy can say, and it just pans to a guy eating Doritos. Like, what?
All right, moving on. Our next question is from Adam Yeager, and he says, better amusement park ride based off a movie, The King's Speech or Precious the Ride?
Oh, man, does Precious the Ride have a chicken tunnel?
What would The King's Speech be? Like, I don't even know how that would be a ride. You have to talk with a stutter and like watch this guy learn
how to talk. You have to just listen to someone study you while you're riding something that's going just awkwardly slow through a tunnel.
If the ride's anything like the movie was for me, the ride will be a 2.5-hour nap.
That's all it is. You just lay in a bed.
So then it actually makes it a really tough decision, because do I want a 2.5-hour nap?
I do like naps.
Or do I want to steal chicken?
No, what would Precious be? Obviously, it'd be something fat.
I feel like the Precious ride would be a prequel to the King's Speech ride. Because I would just eat that bucket of chicken and then pass the fuck out. So I think we combine them. The tour of Academy Award.
Lead into one.
Yeah.
I would assume Precious the ride would be like one of those log rides where you just go down on a fat person, or you just go down on a fat person and just get splashed with the water.
So you would actually ride Precious into
water. Well, maybe not like the actual Precious, but that would be what they made the logs look like.
Yeah. Take a shit ton of logs to make that happen.
But then you're going into water. Then you go in underwater, and that's not a thing I don't think Precious likes.
Yeah, no, that's a stereotype.
You land in chocolate.
Chocolate? What if you flume into chicken?
Just a big ass bucketed chicken.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
Great.
Alright, I might have to go with Precious then. If you get a snack at the end.
Yeah, I would go a snack at the end.
Right, yeah. So Precious the ride then.
And, Precious the ride.
I would love to see like Walt Disney World like use that as like a promotion to like get people to go to their park. And we coming should, this fall,
a more we diverse.
We should work with Planet Hollywood and open a theme park of movie rides that's just fucked up movie rides.
Every Nick Cage movie ever.
Like Philadelphia, the movie. It's just like a slow moving teacups in a courtroom where everyone's talking about how much AIDS they have.
What would be the worst movie to make a ride out of?
I don't know. Black Snake Moan?
You know, it'd be a cool one to be Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah.
On that.
Yeah, that would be a cool ride.
Popping out of
you get the actual Samuel L. Jackson to be in it.
Or you just record him in person and saying shit.
Yeah.
He only has one line, and there's too many motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane. It just plays over and over.
Yeah, no, I think that would be good. You know what else would be a really good ride is Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs the ride.
Another snack.
Rain falling into your face holes.
You can make it a restaurant, too.
Yeah, it is a restaurant. It's a restaurant ride.
You just it's a new like thing. A merry-go-round. You just spin around the whole time slowly.
Yeah, there's no menu. You
just I hope you like meatballs.
They drop shit into your face. You come out, they give you a wet nap, you go on to the next ride.
And they're not gluten-free, you bitches.
Like you're sucking fucking Winnie the Pooh's Honey Hunt or some shit like that. You go to that next. You could have a Shrek ride where they show you really hot chicks and then you have to fuck the awful ogre version of those hot chicks.
What if like you only got like if there was a girl like that, but you could only get so many fucks with like the hot version of her, would you just like only fuck the hot version until you couldn't anymore and then you'd leave her, or would you be like
space them out?
Yeah, would you I don't know, like would you or would you be that shallow?
Yeah, would you keep her hot is what you're saying? And I would fuck her immediately and get her to Ogre so we could get past the bullshit.
I'm just going to get used to this shit.
Isn't that what having kids is, by the way? Times she turns into an ogre and then you guys just wait until you both die.
I guess. I've never had kids, so perhaps. That's what I've heard from several people, though.
Yeah, you guys both look happy and you smile a lot, so I assume you have kids.
I don't think I'll ever have kids. I think that's one of the things I'm not going to venture into is having a child.
She just doesn't want you to get. She just won't want you to get drunk around your kids and then cry.
Cry to them.
I've gotten shit faced around my brother who's in like fourth grade. It was not good. I threw up on my neighbor's patio right in front of him, and then jumped in a pool so no one could grab me so I could stay at the party.
Just like, Jesus, man, get your shit together. I'm in fourth grade.
He was just smacking his head like, gee, come on, man. Hold your alcohol.
Our last question in our answer segment is from Blakely Ricketts, and she says, which is better for your skin, war or war paint?
I don't know how war is good for your skin.
It seems like it would be awful for your skin.
Yeah. I don't know how many platoon type movies where the guys have taken a minute to admire each other's complexions.
You're really bronzed nicely, Private.
I know we in these weeds, and I know we're about to die, but I must let you know your skin ain't never looked better a day in your life.
I brushed up against you while we were crawling through these reeds, and have you been putting some on yourself? Because your skin is soft as hell.
You have got to tell me what you've been doing to yourself out in this Vietnam.
You've been using that cocoa butter? Is that where it went?
It's ridiculous. That's the dumbest question ever. What's better? I mean, I don't know that war paint's good for your skin.
It might be toxic. Who knows?
Look at. I mean, I don't want to make it racial, but I don't think I've ever seen an old Native American person and been like, look at the skin on that guy. They look like skin and turned it into some kind of denim. Like, I watched that movie A Million Ways to Die in the West last night, and the guy who played the old Indian is the guy who used to play the young Indian in, like, Dances with Wolves. And I was like, Jesus Christ, that guy's face looks like they sliced it up and then stitched it back together on his head. It's terrible. So, I mean, I'd actually have to say war is probably better for your skin.
Assuming you don't get a bullet wound.
Well, yeah, because think about, like, the Indian-American War. Like, white people went to the same war that Indians did, and white people had better skin in the long run. So maybe skip the war paint.
Yeah. I never understood the war paint so much. I mean, I guess if you're hiding out in the jungle, but sometimes you see the guys with it, like, in the desert, and I don't really feel like that helps you much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was some kind of sunscreen, and maybe they were trying to prevent themselves from getting sunburned all the time. I don't know, but it ain't working.
So I guess our answer would be war.
Then. War,
yes. War is better for your skin than war paint.
Hey, do you have a question to ask too?
Yeah. Fucking Blakely. See, that's why we don't take questions from women normally.
Named Blakely.
I'm assuming that's a woman. It doesn't sound like a very manly name.
If it's a dude, I want to meet him.
If it's a dude, his parents didn't want him to be a dude.
Yeah.
You speak Blake.
Yeah. Blakely. It sounds like a verb, or it's an adjective. Like, you can't be...
He was throwing up all morning. He was very Blakely.
Yeah, like, exactly. His name is an adjective.
It sounds like an illness.
Yeah.
I watched your late night set on YouTube, and do you read your YouTube comments at all?
No, I mean, sometimes I forget that they're a thing. And then, like, sometimes I'll because a lot of times when I watch videos or I go back and look at videos and stuff, I watch it on a device or I click like a link on my website. So I don't actually go to the YouTube page and look at the comments.
Oh, OK. I was reading yours last night, and they're all good. But this one stuck out to me. It was from an older gentleman, and he said, Josh, you're hilarious and definitely look better with the weight on. Keep it on, big sexy.
Oh yeah, no, those are so apparently somewhere along the lines, I have acquired gay bear fans. And so, yeah, there's like a, I don't know how big this group is, but there are gay dudes who are into bears that are fans of mine, and that's one of them. And he's like, put the weight back on, and like,
oh, yeah. That's hilarious, man. That's pretty funny.
One thing I don't think any of my fans ever have to worry about is the weight finding its way back on. That's, I think that's going to be a perpetual thing that never, I never really struggle with, is keeping the weight on.
Jesus, yeah. That made me chuckle.
Yeah, no, that's a funny one. It's funny, too, like, people talk about that because that bear culture, they're like, oh, does that make you uncomfortable? It never really makes you uncomfortable until you find yourself in a situation where you feel like you could be sexually victimized if somebody wanted to. Like, we went to this – I did this other video that's almost impossible to find because it's set to private, and I keep trying to talk to the guy who wrote it and directed it to make it public. It's a video called Daddy Issues. It's on my IMDb, and I play a gay gym guy. like a gay gym bunny, I think they're called. and so we went to this SAG party at Outfest last year after it was screened at Outfest, and there was a dude who looked like me, but he was like 100 pounds heavier and 7 feet tall. And this dude was standing at the other end of the bar where the event was. I fucking me like, that's the bitch I'm taking home tonight. And my girlfriend, I was like, pointed out to my girlfriend, and I was like, this dude's eye fucking me right now. She's like, what, you're talking about your big brother over there? Guy who looks like he could be your twin? I go, yeah, man. And she's like, well, that's creepy. And she didn't believe me at first, and until he like walked by and like waved at me. And then went outside, and the outside of the bar had like this big glass window on the side of the street, and then just stare-fucked me through the glass during a slow walk up the side, like through the window, like, I'm waiting. Like, and I was just like, oh my God, that's horrifying. I was like, is that what it's like to be a chick? Like,
yeah, that's what I figured is like, just like being a chick is just like, they're like that all the time.
Yeah, because like if a skinny, cute dude is like, oh my God, you're so hot, and he's just like, thank you, that's very nice. When this dude's like, look at you, you're sexy, you're like, please don't murder me with your hair. Like, I feel like this guy could have just snatched me out of the street and ripped my asshole apart. Like, that's horrifying.
Nobody knows that.
Yeah. I tried actually for an hour last night to find Daddy Issues. I couldn't find it.
Yeah, you can't. It's he's got it locked up.
You private fuckers.
I also saw that you were cast as a voluptuous ginger.
Yeah, that's what my credit was in that. Voluptuous credit, yeah. Ginger.
Did when you were you approached for that part, or did you find like look for it to see voluptuous ginger? Yeah, you're like,
oh yeah, that's me. I went through a rigorous casting to be voluptuous ginger. No, it's the dude named Misha Fisher, and he's known my girlfriend for a long time, and the short is autobiographical. It's about a time that his father's kind of one of these dudes who's completely in denial that his son is gay, and so he thought, I'll take my dad to a gay gym and just give him like a mouthful of fucking gay experience, and he won't be able to deny it. And he took his dad, and his dad was like so oblivious to the fact that it was a gay gym. And, like, dudes are hitting on him and flirting on him. And then Misha got mad that his dad was, like, more popular at the gay gym than he was and flipped out. So it was a short kind of based around that. It's really funny. It's written really well. The only knock I'd have on it is that the audio is really, really is, like, just not – it's not ideal. So I learned from doing Survivors Anonymous that audio is the motherfucker of all film. Like, I have no problem doing anything else, like editing – cinematography, color correction, any of those things. But if I ever get the chance to make a TV show or movies, the audio is the first thing I will delegate to somebody else to deal with.
Just because you got to make sure it times up, or you got to make sure the quality is good enough?
Dude, the quality, background noise, like they had no background noise elimination on the audio. The, you know, I think in the situation that we shot in for daddy issues because it was in a gym and there's like bat people working out in the background on equipment. We should have used wireless packs instead of boom mics. So, you know, it just makes it tricky, and booms can be tough too. So I don't know. It's one of those things that I don't know what the right answer is, but yeah, if I invested any significant amount of money in filming something, it would be in audio equipment, because you can shoot stuff with like an iPhone or a 7D and make it look serviceable. You can't fix shitty audio. Like, once it's recorded, it's recorded. And you can try to go back in and dub in like studio stuff or do a different mix, but it's never going to sync up perfectly, and it doesn't always work right. And ever since I've done those short films now, like when I watch something on TV, I know when the audio is not from the actual footage. Like, I just pick that up immediately.
Okay. Yeah, you kind of know it a little bit, so you can spot things here and there that.
So you're like, oh, that's quite right. Yeah, this guy's walking through a field right now. That audio is way too clear, and his back's to the camera, so they probably just had him re-record.
In college, I was in a bunch of video editing classes, and. My girlfriend was too, and we always, when we're watching TV, we pick out dumb shit that, like, you can tell that no one else that didn't really take classes like that would know. And like, in Catfish, we were watching that the other day, and you can tell that, like, they were taking the audio and record, like, that wasn't the same audio they were using. You could see his mouth moving to different words, but you could only see the back of his head.
Right. Yes, it's exactly like that. Stuff like that you see all the time. It's funny that you say that. We have a friend, Sarah, that actually does the editing for Catfish.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's not like the final editor, but she basically goes through the footage and builds sort of the story arc for Catfish. And I don't think she does it for that show anymore. She got moved to another show. But yeah, in one of the episodes previously, the one where they go to LA from this season, you can actually see Sarah in the background, like, working at her desk while Max and Eve are talking. So
I was watching it yesterday, and it was kind of like, it's cool that now you can tell people know what it is. So then he's like, hey, it's Neve, I'm trying to figure this out, do you want to talk to me? People are like, immediately like, yep, I'll Skype with you.
And yeah,
like, the first season they're like, there's this TV show we're trying to do, would you give us some more information?
Yeah
And people were like,
the whole show is easy to poke fun at. Like, I think one of my most popular tweets in the last 6 months has been the one where I go, they should rename the show Catfish to Watch Black People Learn How to Use the Internet. Because, like, the one episode that really set it over the edge for me, because my girlfriend and I have been saying that for the last, like, 2 years, but the one that really set it off for me was the one where the tranny dude got catfished by his own cousin. And I was are these people really sitting in the same, like, they're roommates or something? And he was like, are you really getting catfish from the other side of the couch, you dumb
motherfucker? Why don't you guys just fucking hang out?
Like, yeah, I was just like, so that was enough. That's another short we thought would be hilarious to do, would be the catfish where it's just a dude getting catfished by a dude at the other end of the room, like, sitting on the other end of the couch.
What I also don't understand is, like, how come that, like, these people have been online talking to each other for like 4 years sometimes? It's like, I haven't heard their voice ever. Or like, I've talked to them on the phone, but I've never seen them. And then like one phone call from Neve and Max, and it's like, well, we've arranged a meeting tomorrow in Florida. Like,
yeah.
That's the magic thing that
happens. Behind the scenes that people don't understand is that you get paid to be on Catfish.
Yeah.
So, like, when they go, well, now there's, like, $2,000. I mean, keep in mind, these people are, like, fucking manipulating each other for, like, a couple $100 sometimes. Like, remember the one chick who was like, I got Xbox 360 out of it. Like, I can't remember. She's like, you want your iPhone back? He was like, no, keep it. And Neve's like, really? I would take the iPhone back. Like,
smash that shit just so she couldn't use it.
Yeah, like, it's just fun. It's just, the whole thing is just funny to me. And, but yeah, like, so for you know, these are people that are like 20, 21s. So you're like, yeah, I'll meet this fat girl that I never wanted to meet up with for $2,000 and be on television.
It's crazy that it's a TV show now. You know, like, that whole concept of, like, the whole internet age is, like, the main thing in the world right now. And, like, people are just punking people on the internet left and right to where it's popular enough to make a TV show out of it.
what I really
well, I mean, it sort of happened to me in high school. The internet was new. Like, I graduated 2001. And I think it was like 2000. I met this girl from like one town over, and she sent me these pictures, and she was like gorgeous, right? So me, the way this worked back in the day was me and a bunch of friends from my high school went to meet her and a bunch of friends from her high school in a neutral shopping mall.
Yeah.
And what had transpired from the time she had taken the pictures was that she had had a kid and gained about 65 pounds.
Oh, fuck.
And so, like,
that me picture and my was less flattering. So,
oh, my God, yeah, to say the least. But it was the same person. But me and my – and she was, like – I was only, like, 5'9 at the time, and she was, like, 6 feet tall, which did not come out in the pictures either. So, like, my friends were giving me so much shit because they described my face – as, like, I was talking to the girl on a cell phone like this, trying to figure out where they were in the mall because there's, like, all these different groups of girls. And they go, you had this big smile on your face, and when you connected with her, your face just lost all of its hope. Like, they're like, you looked and you were just like, oh. And they were like, and then the fucked up part was we had this friend, Eddie Moon, man. Eddie was, like, one of these dudes who was, like, a fringe dude of our friends. Like, he would hang out, like, once every... like every 6 months, but he always made it better. Yeah. And Eddie was just like, this is one of those things where we were at like the pizza place Eddie worked at before, and we're like, we're going one town over so Denny can meet this girl from the internet. Eddie's like, I'm going to this. Like, I'm coming. And he's like, went to the pizza place and came to this. And Eddie's like, and I was just like, oh, this is horrible, man. We should just leave. And Eddie was like, no, man, we're staying the whole night. Like, we're seeing this thing through. And he was literally just like a kid in a candy store watching this fucking horrific event unfold in front of us.
What did you do?
Yeah.
I just tried to be as mean as possible to make it shorter. And it was just, but there were this comedy of horrible situations. Like, we sat down and she's like, I'm hungry. I want ice cream. And my face is just like, you don't need ice cream. You don't need ice cream. You're all set.
Let's get you a
and I would just make these sarcastic comments. She'd be like, oh, I'm so hungry. And I'd be like, really? You know?
Holy fuck.
And my friends would be like, my friends would be dying, and her friends would be like, this guy's the jerk. Like, it was one of the most embarrassing situations ever. But, like, my friends gave me shit about it for like 4 or 5 years until, you know, everybody
you
like went
to
college.
Again?
No, I don't even remember her name.
How did you meet her? Like, how did people meet people on the internet back in 2000?
I met her on MySpace.
Dude, this was before MySpace. This was before Friendster. We used to use this chat thing called ICQ.
ICQ.
Do you guys remember
that? No, I didn't. It was before.
It was basically like just an instant messaging software. Everyone from our high school was on it. And then you could do groups. So, like, one of the groups I had was, like, guys I played music with, and a couple of the guys I played music with lived one town over. So, like, I just started chatting with this girl, and then she sent me pictures, and I was like, oh, damn. All right. All set.
Little did you
know.
And
then, it was a nightmare.
Now it's
never
almost too easy.
Never spoke to her again. And nowadays, like, you wouldn't even meet up with a girl if she didn't, like, dildo herself on live streaming video for you to make sure that she's not disgusting or weird.
I used to internet date a lot, and I pray to God that I haven't had one of those, like, what the fuck, like, what kind of monster am I about to meet? Like, you just see him walk up and, like, yeah, I can see how that you used to be that hot person. But that person looked like it died a long time ago.
Yeah, I did that. Like, I did that for like a year, I think, in LA. It was like 2011, maybe. I got on like Match and met people. And you have two types of people on Match.com. You have chicks that will fuck you immediately, or you have chicks who have these ridiculously high standards for somebody who's trying to find a dude on the internet.
And then you just have chicks that are looking for marriage immediately.
Yeah, like that's what I'm talking about. They're just like your first date with them is like a job interview. So here's what I'm looking for, okay, in the position. I need somebody who's committed. I need somebody who's available 40 hours a week. I need somebody who has their shit together. It's just like, holy shit, can we order first before you launch into your fucking menu? Can I look into this menu?
We always just figured it was like people on the internet are just crazy people. Like people dating are just, there's something wrong with them. Which not always the case, obviously, but like that the majority. A lot of
people are dating on the internet because they can't meet.
There's a reason.
In their life.
They're either crazy or they have a child already.
Yes. Yeah, I've found that I can't say there's necessarily a common thread to people that date on the internet because there are people who like. I do understand it in one capacity where there are people who like work jobs and then don't drink, so there's really no reason to go out. Like that makes sense to me. And that's why it worked for me for a while because like I don't drink. So, and if I'm going out, I'm doing a comedy show. And I used to have this thing where like, if I was trying to date a girl, I would not want to bring her to a comedy show because it would always make the show shitty. It's just weird. But for the most part, yeah. And you know, what's interesting is a lot of female comedians are on online dating sites and they all, you know, they're all using Tinder and shit like that. And they always play it off like it's just for material, but it ain't. Like, you're trying to find a husband.
It is until it isn't.
Yeah, I've heard so many female comedians talk about, or like, make jokes to, oh, I use it just for material. I use it so I can meet up with people and have awkward experiences and all that shit. And, like, I always think the same thing.
But you also use it for dick.
Yeah.
When you're horny, I know what you're fucking doing.
Yeah.
I guess that's what Curtis is trying to date. He's tried to date on Tinder, though.
How's that?
I don't do it anymore. I have a chick now. So, but back in the early stages of Tinder, I...
You said that like you were issuing a press statement for the...
Well, it hasn't always been his chick.
I have a chick now. Are we off the record? Yo, it's fucking awesome. Did you meet on Tinder?
No. I met her in a bar.
The old
that I work at.
No, that's not even trying.
It's not. She was like, her friend was like, my friend wants to meet you. Here's her phone number. And that was how we started talking.
Nice.
It was like
the
easiest. No, she did not. I started talking to her and then one thing led to another. We're dating.
Is that her house you're in?
No. That's her car I drive.
Is that her husband that left earlier?
He's almost done from work about this time.
I'm just a roommate.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
No.
The pool boy.
Cabana boy. Yeah.
Yeah. He'll do work around the house, honey, while you're at work. I bet he will.
On your wife.
Yeah.
Well, buddy, I guess that's about it so far.
That's great, man. I appreciate you guys having me. It's been a blast.
Well, man, yeah, thank you so much. This is probably the best one I think we've done.
Yeah, dude, this has been a lot of fun. Go check out joshdannycomedy.com for the Kickstarter info. Donate to that. I'm definitely going to do that. And then the iTunes, Amazon, you can get your album on, right?
You can get my album on everything, which is kind of the death blow of the music business today. So,
what would you suggest to get it on? To get it off your personal site or get it off iTunes?
What gives you the most money?
Yeah, the off my site is the best because I can just put a download card in the mail and send it to you, and I keep all of the money versus on iTunes, they take like 30%. And and then on streaming sites, I get, if you listen to my whole album like 1,000 times, I get like 2 cents. So,
wow, yeah.
Yeah, that's
on Spotify already. Does that pay you anything?
Oh my God, I should show you guys that it's atrocious what Spotify does. And it's kind of shitty because, like, as an artist, you go, well, for users, Spotify is awesome because most people don't buy 12 albums in a year. So Spotify basically said, shit, if we get $120 out of people every year to listen to whatever they want, we're making more than a record store ever made off of a customer, and more people are going to do it. We have the ability to get so many customers. So who am I to say, like, fuck somebody who chooses to use Spotify versus buying albums? So in that capacity, you can't just not participate. because those people are just not going to listen to your stuff, or they'll just go pirate it or whatever. So the downside is Spotify gives no revenues back to their artists. And I mean, to me, it's as simple as this. If you're Spotify, right, you go, okay, we need 20% or whatever to function as a company, 20% of our income. The other 80%, whatever percentage of Spotify's plays you are, is what you get in revenue. I would be fine with that. I would be fine if I was 1/160,000th of their total revenue, then that's what I get back. And that sounds like pennies, but it's a lot more than I'm making now. Like if I made, I mean, if their company revenues are 500 million or whatever annually, and I make 1/160,000th of that. So,
JoshKinneyComedy.com pretty much.
Yeah. I would make $31 from Spotify, right? I haven't made $31 from Spotify. Yeah, and the crazy thing is in streaming, so my album sold on iTunes and stuff, and at shows, maybe 500 copies total. Streaming, it's close to 1 million plays.
Oh, wow.
In Spotify and Pandora, primarily Spotify and Pandora, but there are other services like Move Music, Rhapsody, MySpace Music, like all that stuff is included, but it's a huge amount of plays of people that have listened to it, but the money that you get has absolutely no bearing on that. So it's kind of changed to me now. That's why we're doing the vinyl Kickstarter, is, you know, hopefully it gives the fans sort of an incentive to own something that's limited, that, you know, they can get if they want it. If they don't, they don't even have to worry about it. And you know, it just sort of helps. It sort of helps to have those sort of added bonuses of, like, if you want it this way, you'll get some cool stuff that other people can't get.
Yeah, that is awesome. So it's JoshDennyComedy.com.
Yeah.
Give it all back to him. At Josh Denny on Twitter. And I guess your dates are all on your website and everything.
Yeah, and there'll be a lot more coming soon. I'm looking at doing some crowdsourced touring this year. It'll probably start with a couple dates here at the end of the year, East Coast. And maybe we'll do something in Texas. You guys are
Austin.
In Houston, right?
Come to Austin.
Go to Houston, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, ideally, I'd like to do both of those spots. But, yeah, I might do something in Texas, because that's one place that I have not been to. And when I was going through the breakdown of Twitter followers the other day, dude, something like 15% of my Twitter following is in Texas, like somewhere. Wow. In Texas, whether it's Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, you know, Corpus Christi, whatever. There's a huge percentage of people in Texas. So Texas might make sense to do like a week and do like three or four little shows inside the same week. So maybe we'll do that. But it's sort of like a Kickstarter for concerts. It's a really cool thing, and it's new. I don't know how many artists are using it or having success with it, but it's called Rabble, RABBL.com. And I'll have some dates launch for that here in the next couple weeks.
You were kind of explaining just a little bit more what that is, because I feel like that needs to get spread around. I feel like people don't know about
such
that.
A great idea.
You were talking to us about it earlier, and it was awesome.
Yeah, so basically Rabble's like Kickstarter for concerts, and the only reason I found it is because I read that article about how Foo Fighters crowdsourced for a concert in Virginia, and they basically just did a Kickstarter and said, look, we need to make 70 grand, so tickets are $50 a piece, we have to sell this many tickets, and if we make 70 grand, we'll do the venue. But there are some logistical issues with doing it on Kickstarter. For instance, if you're trying to do multiple dates, you have to run separate Kickstarters. And then the other problem with Kickstarter is it doesn't necessarily tie, like, you'd have to commit to a date. It's just not really made for concerts. So these guys with Rabble, who are fucking geniuses, decided to make a website that's a Kickstarter specifically for shows. So I can set a show on Rabble.com that says, I want to do a show in Austin, Texas, the week of September 5th. And I can set a minimum in there that says this is what I need to make to do it. So it's basically your admission cost times the number of seats for you to get the money you would need to make that show happen. And then you just sell tickets. So people can go, so you guys could go in and go, I'll go to a show in Houston the first week of September. And so you click it, you actually have to pay, like you're buying a ticket. And then once we hit the minimum, then it's locked in. The show's considered booked. I go get a venue. I specify an actual date. And then as long as the show happens, I still get paid the money. If for whatever reason the show doesn't happen, everyone that pledged towards it get their money back. So it's even easier than if you bought tickets to a concert that doesn't happen. Then you have to go through the shit of getting refunded through Ticketmaster or somebody else. And most of those bands will be like, we'll do a makeup date. So we're just going to keep your money for a year until we have time in the schedule to do a makeup date.
And hope you're free in the same day.
Right. And it's just like, fuck, that's just shitty. So yeah. It's really cool. You know, if I were building the website, go, it needs to have this. It needs to have flexibility with this. It needs to do this. It does all of that. The other thing that I think is pretty cool is that it does not show the users what the total amount is. And I think that's good because it's sometimes those numbers feel insurmountable. Like, could you imagine if it said, you know, Foo Fighters need to make 70 grand? People would be like, Jesus Christ, that's kind of high. Like, you want to make 70,000 to come to Richmond? Fuck you.
Yeah.
So, you know, and people don't understand the logistics behind it. Like, for instance, Foo Fighters, to do a tour, they have a stage show, they have lighting, they have people that run all that, they have sound. So probably 20 of that goes into producing the show. Then they have an insurance premium for the venue that they have to pay. And they have to be insured up to $1 million, $2 million, or whatever it is. So that's another 10 grand or so. So those guys, you know, there's four guys in the band. They might make 10 grand each for that show. So yeah, it's cleaner. Like, you guys don't have to see any of that. All you see is, here's what it costs for me to come to town. And the other thing I think is really cool about it is, if you bought tickets and you really want to see that artist, knowing that it won't happen unless there's enough pushes people to be like, dude, there's this really great comedian coming to town. We think he's funny. You should get tickets and come. Go on the site, buy your tickets. And that way the show happens and we'll have a great time.
It really gives fans the power.
It does, yeah. And it lets people vote with their wallets. And it also, you know, like, the thing that's really cool is I was fortunate enough to be on the Jeselnik Offensive a couple years ago, or actually about a year ago now. And I was able to kind of parlay that into a really big Twitter following. I have no idea what the value of that Twitter following is from a touring perspective. So like I told you, I can look at Texas and go, well, of my 65,000 followers, 15% are in Texas, which is a staggering number, right? What's that, about 9,000 people? But how many are actually going to come to shows?
Yeah.
So, because the reality is Twitter is Twitter, right? I don't look at Twitter and go, these are all bona fide fans, because if it was that way, I'd have 60,000 favorites on every tweet, right?
You'd also you'd also have a lot of porn stars that were fans, right?
Right. I mean, so, like, you know, if you look at that and you just assume that's all real in terms of, like, what your interactivity will be, then you're dumb. And if somebody looked at that and said, I have 9,000 fans in Texas, so I'm going to book a venue that's 3,000 people, I mean, that's ridiculous. So some people are only ever going to interact with me and my career through Twitter. And some of those people are people that will buy albums, and some of those people beyond that are people that will come to shows. So the cool thing about crowdsourcing tour dates is that I don't have to guess. I don't know the difference between Austin and Houston and how many people would come out. So the reality is I can just put it up, let it go. And if 100 people want to come out in Austin, then I'll do a show for 100 people. If 50 want to come out in Austin, I'll do a show for 50. If 500 want to come out, that would be awesome. But, you know, it sort of allows you to know what the size of the crowd's going to be. And the great thing about it, and the thing I think fans need to understand, is you have no idea the level of stress that surrounds artists when it comes to not knowing who's actually going to show up at a venue. And I don't know about with music, but definitely with comedy, if I know what I'm getting into before I even get there, and I know that it's a show for 50 people and we've sold all the tickets, the show you're going to get is going to be a much better show.
Yeah, I bet.
Because, like,
less pressure on you.
It's a little safer, yeah. You just know, and you get a little bit excited, like, I'm going to play for 100 people. You know, that's pretty big.
I'll play for 20 if it makes sense, yeah. You know? And that's the cool thing. Like, as long as one of the shows inside of a week makes enough to justify the trip, then, you know, you can do smaller shows. So, like, I could get to a point where if I do a show in Austin that's for 200 people or 150 people, I could go, shit, I'll go to Texas for a week to do that show. Then I can do little smaller shows in San Antonio. I can do a smaller show in Houston or in Dallas or whatever. So, you know, and then think about that. You know, people can go to their local neighborhood theater or small rock club and see somebody that otherwise would have never came there.
Yeah.
And the people want you to come there. They're like, search for you. And they're like, I want this guy to come here. I'm going to pay money ahead of time just to get him here.
Yeah. So
I think that's pretty cool.
Wow. So look at that as well, I guess. There should be a lot of dates. I'm hoping to do 50 in 2015, and should be probably a handful before the end of the year.
Well, I'm definitely going to go on Rabble and try and get you to come to H-Town.
Yeah,
that'll be good.
But thanks a lot for coming on the podcast, man. Hopefully we can get you another time sometime in the future.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks, guys.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. Pass the gravy, bitches.
Rape me. Rape me, my friend. Rape me. Rape me again. I'm not the only one. 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 Hate me. Rape me again.